We're doing the laws of Shabbos, and we were discussing the laws of cooking or baking. And the first thing we'll discuss is the concept of Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon is the first vessel in which a liquid was heated on the fire. So any food item that we would be prohibited from placing on the fire on Shabbos, we would also be prohibited from placing inside a pot that's on the fire on Shabbos. So let's say you have soup and you want to add spices to the soup. You have chillant and you decide it would be nice if you added garlic to the chillant. Well, you can't do that on Shabbos. So long as the item, the chillant, the soup is on the fire, you're not allowed to do that. What happens when you take it off the fire? So then we'll start with step one. If your intention is to put it back on the fire, so then again, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. So let's say you're going to eat the soup on Friday night and on Shabbos day, and you decide that for Shabbos day, you want the soup to have more garlic, more water, or something else. You want to add something to your soup, but you're going to put it back on the fire. So when you put it back on the fire, you're cooking. So that's step one that's going to be prohibited. Step two is if the Kli Rishon is still hot, you took it off the fire, you're not putting it back on the fire, but it's piping hot. So then we would also be prohibited from putting in that Kli Rishon items that are not yet cooked. So what would be the solution if you come in the morning or before you go to sleep at night and you smell the chillant and it smells great, but you realize that in 4 hours it's going to smell burnt? So you have one of two options. One thing you can do is you can raise the chillant a little bit. Let's say you have an empty tuna can, you can raise the chillant. You put a tuna can under it. So it doesn't get burnt. You could take, a disposable tin and put it under it. What you should not do is take a pot cover and put it under it. I've done that and destroyed my pot covers because the handle can't handle the heat. Meaning, even though if the handle is a plastic handle. So if you want to raise the pot off the fire, you can do that any way you want. I personally use empty tuna cans. I save the empty tuna cans, clean them out, make sure they don't have an edge that can hurt someone, and then I use those when necessary to raise the pot. So that's one easy solution. In a second, I'll get to you. Another solution would be if you have boiling water. If you have water that's been pre-boiled, that's hot now, that's boiled water. So you can transfer that boiled water into your chillin' pot, because technically what you're doing is you're taking it from one pot that's on the fire and transferring it to another pot. So you'll ask, but it's going into a cup in the way, right? Let's say you have a hot plate, you have a plata, and on that plata you have one pot with water, you have another pot with chillin', a meaty chillin'. So halachically, you're not supposed to pour directly from a parv pot into a fleishik pot that's on the fire, because the steam from the meat is coming up into your parv pot. Just like you're not supposed to use a salt shaker directly over a pot. You're supposed to have a fleishik salt shaker and a milchik salt shaker and a parv salt shaker, because technically when you're pouring salt, the steam is coming into your salt shaker. So we don't pour things directly into a pot unless they're of the same gender. If I have a fleishik pot with water, I have a meaty pot with water, then I could pour from that pot directly into my chillin'. Fine, because I know that pot is a fleishik pot. The water is technically fleishik, right? But if I have a parv pot, so if I want to transfer the water from that parv pot on the fire, I will pour it into either a fleishik cup or a disposable cup, and then I will pour from that into my chillin' pot. So technically I've cooled off the water a drop, but that's okay. It's still very hot. That's okay. So long as it's still very, very hot, I can transfer it from the parv pot that's on the fire into a cup, from that cup into my chulin pot. So those are two ways I can contend with my chulin pot being, I'm scared it's going to be burnt. If I smell the chulin, it smells good Friday night, but by tomorrow morning it's going to be burnt. I can either add boiling water to it, or I can raise the pot. Yeah. Oh, okay. No. The rule is you have to toivel an item that's going to come in contact with the food. If you're using a tile to raise the pot, that tile is not coming in contact with the food, so you don't have to toivel it. Yes. Oh, yes.
So if you have a kumkum on Shabbat, if you take a glass cup and you take hot water from the kumkum, then
for those who use glass interchangeably, so then you would be allowed to use a glass cup, yes. I would still recommend cleaning off the steam before you make yourself a cup of coffee. That's a, yes. No, the salt is going to, very often it's going to absorb the steam from the chulin pot. So if a person is using the same salt shaker, so he can either, he shouldn't, because there's another issue, and that is that when you use salt shakers, so let's take a situation where you're having your Shabbos meal, and then you grab the salt shaker. Well, people at their Shabbos meal will sometimes eat the chicken. Imagine they're serving chicken wings. So a lot of people eat that with their hands. Even if you eat it with a napkin, your hands get dirty. So the assumption is that the vessels we're going to use during the meal are going to get dirty. You're going to sometimes have, you're going to have grease on your hands, you're going to have chulent on your hands. So if you're handling that salt shaker during the meal, the assumption is the salt shaker is going to become greasy with the meat in a meat meal. And if you're eating a milchik meal, so then sometimes you made yourself pancakes, sometimes you're eating something else, which also your hands can get greasy with the milk. And that's why we keep separate, that's another reason why we keep a separate salt shaker for meat and a separate salt shaker for milk. Usually it won't make it disqualified. In each case, you would have to ask, but 95% of the time, it would not be a problem. Bidiyevit, you're saying if you use the same salt shaker, so 95% of the time, bidiyevit, the food is still kosher. Almost always. That's bidiyevit. There's a question, how do I run my kitchen? And then there's a question, when I made a mistake, is it still kosher? Those are two different questions. You know. Yeah. If you made a mistake, so you should ask, but b'di'evit, it's almost always going to be kosher. Two salt shakers, I recommend, if you're going to get two salt shakers, I recommend two things with regards to salt shakers. Number one, they have salt shakers where the top, the cover, is a different color. So get a blue one for milk and a red one for meat. That's, when you do this, one of the things you should have in your kitchen is nail polish. Get yourself some red nail polish and some blue nail polish and some yellow nail polish. Why? Because when you're going to wash out the salt shakers every so often, so you might do them all at once. And then you know the lid, which one is meat and which one's milk. But what about the bottom? How will you know which one to match which? So if you put a drop of it's also helpful when your mother comes and wants to help in the kitchen and when guests come and want to help in the kitchen. You label the stuff that's milk with a blue marker and the stuff that's meat with a red marker, or a marker won't last through the wash, so nail polish. So I'm not saying every fork and spoon have to be labeled, but when you have dishes that can easily be interchanged, like a plastic salt shaker, so that's number one. Try to get different covers and make a small mark on the bottom of the salt shaker so you know which one is meat and which one's milk. That's number one. Number two, with regards to salt shakers, so here in Israel, we don't have such good venting systems. That's why people have mold in their showers and in their kitchens. So it's recommended because there's more steam in the house here in Israel than in the United States. In the United States, the way people heat their houses, the houses are very dry. Here in Israel, the way things work, very often there's too much humidity in the homes. So that hurts the salt shaker. So you end up having salt that can coagulates inside the salt shaker or in the holes. So they have salt shakers where the lid, when it closes, has a lot of points to it, and it opens the holes of the salt shaker. So that's a more useful salt shaker than the classical one, which is open all the time. When you have a lid that closes, so then even in the house, when there's steam, it will keep the salt drier, and it will also always open the holes of the salt shaker. So that's just practical. It's a better salt shaker for Israel. Okay, so what we discussed so far is that a kli rishon on the fire is always going to cook, and it's prohibited to put something that's not cooked inside. A kli rishon that you intend to put back on the fire, you may not put any non-cooked items in it. Even something baked, you're not allowed to put in. You'll say, I'll put in pieces of croutons, pieces of bread. If the things were baked and not cooked, so then we say, yesh bishula harafiyah. You could cook something that was pre-baked, so then you would not be allowed to put it in a kli rishon, in the first vessel that's on the fire. What about when you take it off the fire? Well, so long as it has the heat, so long as it's yatzoledis bo, so then it's also mevashel. So then I would not be allowed to put into it something, an item that could get cooked. So then, okay, what about you want to make yourself tea? So let's hold off. We will discuss tea later, how to make tea, how to make coffee. We'll get to that later in our learning. Okay, so we began an understanding of Kli Rishon, and next week we'll continue with Kli Rishon.